The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
Chairman O'Malley Yesitela and the Uhuru III won a historic victory against the United States government and the FBI. We will discuss the sentencing hearing and what comes next. The transition to the Trump presidency has caused anxiety and stress. How can we make 2025 a healthy and productive year? We will talk to Diane Giasso from Yao Xian. Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm your host, Dr. Marsha Adebayo, and I'm with you the fourth Wednesday of each month. First of all, Happy New Year and belated Martin Luther King Day. Although it took too long, former President Biden commuted the life sentence of Leonard Peltier, a leader in the American Indian Movement who was unjustly incarcerated for nearly 50 years. Leonard is now 80 years old. In addition, former President Biden also posthumously pardoned the Honorable Marcus Garvey. Although Biden pardoned Peltier and Garvey, it was public outrage and political activism that provided the power and pressure that made these victories possible. So congrats to everyone in our listening audience who fought for these political victories. My first guest today knows something about the power of political activism, Chairman O'Malley Yesitela of the African People's Socialist Party. Chairman O'Malley, along with Jesse Neville and Penny Hess, were found not guilty of acting as unregistered Russian agents. However, in an unfounded and contradictory verdict, they were found guilty of conspiring to act as Russian agents. They're appealing the conspiracy conviction. To remind you of Chairman O'Malley's background, Chairman O'Malley is a Pan-Africanist, socialist, and activist. He was born in St. Petersburg, Florida. He served in the Army from 1959 to 1963. Where he first publicly critiqued US imperialism and challenged racism. In 1966, Chairman O'Malley established the St. Petersburg Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. In 1972, Chairman O'Malley formed the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party. He's authored 13 books, including The Road to Socialism is Painted Black in 1987. Good morning, Chairman O'Malley, and welcome back to What's at Stake.
Good morning, and I just want to thank you so very, very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you on this incredible listening base that you represent, because you played such a magnificent role in the victory that you just talked about and moving the people are the critical factor, always have been. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no, congratulations to the WPFW listenership. It was the Washington, D.C. listenership of WPFW yes. that took up this cause, came out for the demonstrations in Washington, D.C., wrote the letters to the judges. So I am just incredibly proud of my community this morning that we organize so effectively for justice in your case. So before we get into the sentencing and the complexity of all that and providing an update of where you're at now and how we can continue to play a role in this political victory, just in case there's someone who is hearing about this for the first time, could you please give us a summary of what happened to you?
Well, on July 29th, 2022, mm-hmm. We were abruptly assaulted by the United States government. I was at home, it was pre-dawn in St. Louis, Missouri. This loudspeaker from the out of the dark commanded people should come out of this address, come out with our hands up, with our hands empty. This is the FBI. And when that happened, explosions started going off around the house and even in the back stairwell of the house and the throughout the neighborhood and what have you. And our attempts, the attempts by my wife to let people know that we were under assault failed because they had jammed our telephone. So we couldn't communicate with anybody. And we went downstairs and I was first downstairs. And there was an armored personnel carrier parked in front of my house. There were these there was this military force with assault weapons that were mounted with these laser targeting devices so that these red dots were popping off my chest with a clear warning that they would kill me. Mm-hmm. And so I came downstairs. My wife followed. And when she opened the door following me, a drone went past her head, almost hitting her in the head, going up the stairs and what mm-hmm. have you. So after getting down, they zip tied me, handcuffed my wife behind her back, and they took our cell phones. They occupied our home. They were there 6 or 7 hours. We were able finally to get them to say that why they were there. They said something about this is going to be in the news and that an indictment is going to come down on a Russian national in Russia and your name was listed in the indictment and we're serving a search warrant. And so at the same time, we lived in a relatively was the most impoverished sector of St. Louis. It's changing a little now because of the work we've done here. But at the same time, in South St. Louis, which is where the majority of the white people live, they had attacked our building over there, and they used battering rams. They used flashbang grenades. They broke windows, broke doors down, went into there, went upstairs to the apartment where Jesse Neville, who was one of the Uhuru Three, was with his partner, now his wife. Put them under guns, went to Penny Hess's house, who was another of the Uhuru Three, also on the South Side, put them under gunpoint, under guns and what have you. So they occupied our spaces for 7-8 hours, searching. And they terrorized our community. People were afraid to come out of their houses because that was happening. St. Petersburg, Florida, they did a similar thing. Our home in St. Petersburg, Florida was occupied by scores of FBI agents. There are videos, you can see them, scores coming out of this empty house, but they took all kinds of recording devices. They took our videos, our computers, laptops, and you know things like that. So it was they did something like $40,000 in damage. In terms of the property damages and the materials that they stole from us. And then 9 months later, and they didn't arrest anybody, but the media carried this story everywhere, all around the world, about these unindicted co-conspirators working with the Russians, charged with working with the Russians. Two charges. Well, now there's no charge at all. We're just unindicted. And that was something that went for 9 months. We were unindicted, no indictment or anything. So 9 months later, we were indicted and went to court in Tampa, Florida, where they handcuffed us, put us in leg irons and things like that, did mug shots, fingerprinting, et cetera. So that was the background. And then a few weeks after that, we went to trial in Tampa, Florida. And on charges of, as you mentioned, of being Russian agents, agents of a foreign power, Russia, without notifying the Attorney General that we were working for this foreign power, and then conspiracy to be agent without notifying the Attorney General. These carry with them a total of 15-year penalties and $250,000 fines for each of the three of us. Mm-hmm. And so we went to trial. But in the meantime, we built a massive movement. It was an incredible anti-colonial movement. I don't think anything like that has ever occurred, in the sense that it was not just defend these Black people, these Black radicals, et cetera. It was something that recognized this was an assault on everybody, certainly all the colonized people. And so we built this massive movement of, you know, more than 240 so different groups and organizations, personalities came onto us, part of this Hands Off Uhuru, Hands Off Africa movement. And so it was a movement that was conscious of being an anti-colonial free speech movement. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was characterized as that is because that African people have never had the advantage of the Bill of Rights or the First Amendment that's a part of the Bill of Rights, which is something ratified by the U.S. Congress in 1791 when Black people were property. There were no such as things as rights. And then in 1857, I think it was, this was something that was reaffirmed by the Supreme Court of the United States. People are trembling now about the Supreme Court. In 1857, the Supreme Court said Black people have no rights at all that white people have to respect.
That was the Maryland Supreme Court.
In fact, it was, we used to have organizers in that place where the guy was from, the justice, Chief Justice was from. This was the Chief Justice who made that ruling.
Right.
And so anyway, you know, that was, you know, like the context of everything. And so we say what has happened is that they used the Russia thing, which is a real boogeyman, because, you know, I'm old enough to remember as a child where we were always being frightened by the Russians are going to drop the bomb, and you get under the desk if the bomb, you know, comes, and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's built into the consciousness over a long period of time of white people in this country, the fear of the Russians. And then, of course, white people always afraid of Black people. So you got this combination of Russians and Black people that they would use to frighten people. And then they would frighten white people into surrendering all of the so-called Bill of Rights that's supposed to exist that I never had. So when they take, I don't have free speech, they're not taking anything from me. I never had. I wouldn't have had to participate in the Civil Rights Movement in 64, Voting Rights Movement in 65, if we had any of these things. These were the things that there was a presumption that white people had these things. And then white people could find themselves inadvertently sometimes, and sometimes consciously, surrendering these rights because they were targeting Black people when they took away free speech, which meant they was really taking your free speech because we never had it. Black people have been in the vanguard of the struggle for free speech because we never had it. The vanguard of the struggle, freedom of association, because we never had it. Don't have it up today. In fact, if you have two or three Black people walking together and the police are there, we are already suspects because of that. So that's the reality that we've lived with. And that, so we said it's an anti-colonial free speech movement. And we call on everybody to join with this movement fighting for free speech, because if this is the foundation of the struggle for free speech. Mm-hmm. And we want a lot of people to participate. And that's one of the things that carried us to victory, because we refuse to allow them to isolate the Black liberation movement. You're not just going to isolate us and say we're just killing Black people, you know, et cetera. And that's also extraordinary, because who had ever seen a situation? They killed Malcolm X. You didn't see any movement from white people. They killed Martin Luther King. Very little from white people. Black people burned down Washington, D.C. They had to put tanks around the White House because of Africans in Washington, D.C., which, by the way, is one of the things that made it necessary for them to gentrify D.C. to get these Black people out of there in such great numbers because it was a security problem. They're being surrounded by all of these Africans who, you know, are colonial subjects and what have you. They were able to do these kinds of things. They killed Fred Hampton. There was no outrage, but this time, they had to attack the white community, too, because we had built this movement, a solidarity movement of white people who united with the struggle against colonialism. And so that's why there's the Uhuru 3 as opposed to just us, which is where they would prefer it to be.
You know, I guess there are a couple of thoughts that I have, you know, listening to. First of all, WPFW broke the story. So, you know, that's another story. That's another issue I want. And that's one of the reasons why this station, I think, is so important, because we go places that no one else
Yes.
However, but also I know that there were lawyers who were advising you and who I know I spoke with, who were basically, again, advising you to downplay the politics, to, you know, put on a Western suit, to stop talking about colonialism, to
right.
stop talking about liberation, and just try to get through the trial as best you could, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, play the Negro, the, like, I'm really sorry, you know, Mr. President, that I inadvertently did something wrong with Russia, and please, you know, not sentence me for too long. And you didn't do that. I mean, you took an alternative course that I'm going to use this platform to really politicize the community and help them understand what's really going on. Can you just provide, because there must be so many people in our listening audience right now who are faced with a similar situation of people saying, look, just keep your mouth closed, your head down, and, you know, maybe you won't get so much time. You did the opposite. So can you explain what the thinking was behind taking such an aggressive political position as opposed to taking a very, so again, heads down, closed position?
Well, for one thing, we didn't, and I didn't certainly build a party and struggle to build a movement to keep me out of prison. Our objective was to end the colonial domination of Black people and oppressed peoples here and around the world. That's what our objective was. And we were not going to surrender that just because now I'm the person who is the example of the existence of colonialism. You don't surrender to that. You've got to fight it. And that's what we did. In fact, the charges themselves were charges that would criminalize Black people fighting for freedom. To say that everything they charged us with was associated with free speech for Black liberation, Black freedom, et cetera. So we couldn't surrender to that. And we had to go out and build a movement and win people. And by the way, it's worth mentioning that we have been around for a while, and we've been building this. We've moved strategically. We have been moving strategically all along to build a whole movement to oppose the colonial domination of African people here around the world and colonialism in general. So we spoke out. In fact, when we sat down with our lawyers, the ones who became our lawyers, who did an incredible job, one of the first questions I asked is there anyone here who believes that we are guilty? Because if they had said yes, if they had quibbled around that question, we had to get new lawyers. We were not going to go with that. And so, and over a period of time, we became a team. The lawyers became a part of the team and became profound believers in what it was that we were struggling for. When these lawyers came and saw the economic development work that we do, they said, now we understand why you're being attacked. It has nothing to do with what it is they're saying. So we felt like it was absolutely necessary to expose this and bring people into the process. And the FBI, and we were warned, they have a 97% victory rate. But they have a 97% victory rate because everybody makes a deal. Everybody, they don't go to trial. They don't fight. They say they surrender and take what they call a plea deal. We're not pleading. We're not taking a deal. We're not surrendering the space that Black people fought for all these years. And the only reason the judge, as you know, the judge said during the sentencing that he was troubled himself by the thing that we were charged with. He was troubled by the fact that that they could charge us with knowingly doing this thing, conspiring, and not letting the attorney general know that we were working for them, when the law didn't require us. They didn't say anything about whether we knew that that was the case or not. How could we willingly, knowingly work for the Russians if we don't even know that that there's such a law that prohibits that? And so he says, I'm troubled by this. And the only reason he had an opportunity to say that is because we fought. If we had surrendered, if we had taken the deal, the prosecutor wanted us
to be in prison, the final thing they said when you were there, Asha, was that they wanted to give me 3 years in prison and charged me a $100,000 fine and another, and I had to pay some back taxes on something that we're in a contest with the IRS because we sold some property or something like that. So they would come up with $200,000 for me alone and 3 years in prison. And the only reason that the judge had an opportunity to make the statements he made was because we fought it. If we hadn't fought it, if we had surrendered it, surrendered to that, then the fact is that we would have participated in criminalizing free speech for Black people. You can't criticize the United States government for anything. So we had to fight it. And that's why part of the reason we fought and struggled for it. And that's part of the victory, that we wouldn't allow them to take that from us. And they gave us time to run. They gave us time to make a deal, et cetera, and that would have meant that the democratic space that Black people fought and died for, we would have surrendered that. We refused to do that.
And I should just mention that this is all happening under President Biden. So
you must mention that it's happening under President Biden.
This is all happening. So, you know, we're running out of time, but I wanted you quickly to talk about the fact that now you are on probation. You've moved back to St. Louis. What does that mean? And is there something, is there a place for us to participate?
Yes. I mean, the thing is that we are appealing this verdict. We're not even taking this. We filed a motion to appeal. We're raising monies for that because mm-hmm. that's going to cost money as well. But we're building a movement, deepening the movement. We pull all of these people together. It's crazy to not keep this movement growing, building. Our struggle contributed to the liberation of Leonard Peltier. Yes. We had him on the front burner. Our struggle participated in them have to talk about Marcus Garvey. You know, here's Biden leaving. Now he's talking about Marcus Garvey. At the same time, he's putting Garveyites in prison for doing the same things that Garvey did. So it's hypocritical as hell. But it's a whole new era. And so we're asking people to join in with that. Go to handsoffuhuru, uhuru.org. And you can see the kinds of things that we're involved in right now and calling on building a massive anti-colonial free speech movement and an anti-colonial human rights organization that's going to span throughout the United States and cross all kinds of ideological and political parameters. And so that's what doing. Keep working with KP. Keep working with WPFW because you are part of the reason that this victory happened. Thank you.
Well, not so quick. We still have a few more minutes.
Okay.
So there's an extraordinary amount of anxiety right now in the country regarding the election of President Trump. And, you know, very quickly, I think we have maybe 2 or 3 minutes before we have a long break. I'd like to know what your perspective is on this period of history.
This extraordinary moment. I have never felt as optimistic in my 60 some odd years of involvement in this struggle as I do today, because what we see is a profound crisis in the entire social system. It's global crisis that we see, and certainly it is concentrated in the United States because the United States is the big colonial hegemon of the world. The internal contradictions in this country shredding the society and basic rules of every day. The fact is that Trump has just freed thousands of people, and many of them are people who attacked the United States, you know, government itself. The fact that you have this movement that's challenged all of the norms that's existed in this country. They don't exist anymore. The fact that we had a situation that exposed the crisis, the split in the ruling class itself around some of these profound questions, and the assault that we've seen made on the Atlantic Charter, that's been the international group that's controlled the rest of the whole world for the last 75 or 80 years with the creation of the United Nations, creation of NATO, all of these things that's in motion right now that Trump got elected attacking, by the way, which led even some people to call Trump anti-imperialist because he attacked NATO, he attacked United Nations, he attacked the basic principles that came into existence at the end of the Second World War, et cetera. So that's part of it, too. I think it's really important that we saw the ineffectiveness of the bourgeois media. That's why this station is so important, because of everything, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Huffington Post, all of them, Wall Street Journal, in the beginning, all of them did everything they could to elect Harris, and it didn't work. They couldn't pull the people into it. The black petty bourgeoisie, Kamala Harris, or Barack Hussein Obama, your local guy here, all of them did everything. Your favorite basketball player, your favorite talk show billionaire host, none of them could bring enough black people here to get Kamala Harris elected. We see the disintegration of this entire process in the black petty bourgeoisie, and we saw that black people found out that the Democratic Party as an alternative is no good. She had all these black people voting for Trump, so-called Latinos voting for Trump, et cetera, busted up the entire thing. Now it's our time. Mm-hmm. We take responsibility ourselves and not rely on the Democratic Party or any of them to rescue us. That's why we build organization and accept our responsibility to lead as opposed to be led, and accept our responsibility to go ahead and be what, and tell that to the people, bring the people into this process. I'm trying to say as much as I can, as quickly as I can.
No. I think you're doing extremely well.
This is what we have to do. When the Black Panther Party existed, when the Black Revolution of the 60s existed, nobody was saying, oh, if the Democrats don't get elected, we're in trouble. We became what was necessary. We were what was necessary, and everybody recognized that. And what they see in the African People's Socialist Party Uhuru movement is that we are bringing that back into existence. We are rebuilding that. And that's one of the reasons they had to attack us, because the people have an opportunity to say, we are the alternative that we've been looking for. It's not the Democratic Party. It's not the Republican Party. It's what we build right now. And we're in the process of building it. So
how can people get in touch with you, Chairman Omali? How can they get in
touch? there are two ways. I think most critically right now is Hands Off Uhuru, uhuru.org. Go to handsoffuhuru.org. And then, of course, we APSP, as for African People's Socialist Party, uhuru.org. That's how you can find us. Or go to Marsha Adebayo.
Call me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your courage. I sit at your knees and I learn every time you talk. And thank you so much for caring enough about your community that you would put yourself in such in front of a firing line. You are the present day in my mind, like the present day Malcolm. You're amazing. So thank you so much. And obviously we'll have you on again. I know everyone's going to call me and say, when is he going to be back on again? Mm-hmm. So we will have you on very soon again, most likely next month. So thank you.
And also, Diane, it's good to see you, because one of the most exciting things I've done was walk into many, many, many years ago into a Chinese pharmacy, for lack of a better term, you know. Yeah. And that was amazing. That was very good. So thank you so much. Thank you. Comrade Marsha.
Thank you so much.
Uhuru.
Uhuru, thank you so much. Uhuru. We will take a short break for community announcements.
Peace. This is your social justice calendar for the week of Monday, January the 20th. On January 22nd, from 5 to 8:30 p.m. at Trinity Washington University, the D.C. Girls Coalition, alongside co-sponsors for the Youth of Color-led event, are hosting a 2025 Youth Town Hall. More info can be found at diversecityfund.org. On Wednesday, January 22nd, from 6 to 8 p.m., at CL Social Club, 601 K Street, Washington, D.C., there will be the YNPNDC January Happy Hour for nonprofit professionals to network and build community. More info can be found on the Young Nonprofit Professionals Network of D.C. Eventbrite page. Finally, on Saturday, January 25th, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at All Souls Church Unitarian, there will be a Rise for Democracy teach-in. on 1500 Harvard Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. More info can be found on all-souls.org. The WPFW Social Justice Calendar connects you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. Submissions are due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Well, welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm your host, Dr. Marsha Coleman Adebayo. My next guest is Diane Giosso. I was trying to pronounce that with an Italian accent, Diane. I'm not sure how successful I was. Thank you, the Yao Shen Center for Chinese Medicine. So welcome. This is your first visit to WPFW, I think, right?
Thank you so much. And I feel that warm welcome, Marsha. And I'm so happy to be here with the community today.
Thank you. Thank you. So let me just provide, since this is your first time being on my show, let me provide a brief bio of your background. Diane is a graduate of Academy for Five Element Acupuncture, AFEA. Her approach to Chinese medicine emphasizes healing as a developmental process. Her initial training was grounded in five element acupuncture with J.R. Wosley and his senior students. She is currently a professor at Dao Tradition College of Chinese Medical Arts in North Carolina, where she teaches the specialties of cardiology and neurology. Diane is a former instructor of acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine at Maryland University of Integrative Health. She maintains her clinical practice at Yao Shan Center for Chinese Medicine in Baltimore and Washington, D.C. Her clinical concentrations are gynecology, cardiology, neurology, and emotional health. God, do we need that, Diane. Diane is the founder of Nine Stars Botanicals, a company producing quality, innovative Chinese herbal remedies. This is an impressive background, Diane. I didn't know all of this about you until I read your bio. Absolutely incredible. So there are many people in our community right now, as a result of the new administration, that are extremely fearful.
Absolutely.
And are stressed out in terms of what the future holds for both the immigrant community, the activist community, the Black community, and the other communities. Can Chinese medicine provide ideas, or can you provide ideas about how people can address this kind of stress?
100% Chinese medicine is there for people. And the idea that Chinese medicine has always been there. So there's, through time, new diseases, many new conditions, but human nature and the way people heal is always the same. And that's why Chinese medicine is an extremely versatile tool to come back to when we don't know what to do, or how the environment is changing. This is crucial. And we're in a time where there's a lot of upheaval. And the Chinese classics also teach us when there's upheaval, when there's so much change, there's nothing wrong with standing still to gather our energy until it's clear how to move. And together, we're subject to certain conditions that we can't escape. I mean, the most easy to understand is the weather. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, there's the seasons, and then there's the astrology that's happening. And so we're both all afflicted, but we're all benefiting from those conditions. And so the idea of being in a collective is crucial during this time, and being able to synchronize.
I'm sorry, what does it mean when you say to be a part of a collective is crucial right now? What does that mean?
Realize in some ways that we're all in this together. What's happening with the seasons? The sun shines on all of us. Mm-hmm. The sun withdraws in winter from all of us. And so being able to connect, even if we don't feel always part of the whole, to be able to find a place where a downbeat connects with others. Mm-hmm. And that idea of the vibration mm-hmm. can connect us all. And so if we're syncopated from the greater whole of the environment, how it's changing, finding those nodes where we can connect to each other or the others that have our beat, that's a crucial part of it. Because anxiety as a whole is a disorganization from a Chinese medical perspective of how we're feeling. Anxiety is, in a way, suspension of our qi, of our energy, of our relationships. And so being able to distill it back down to our primal feelings, are we fearful? Mm-hmm. Are we grieving? Mm-hmm. Are we angry? That's the first step. Mm-hmm. It's not being up, disorganized in our thoughts and emotions, but distilling them down to what we really feel and then being able to express that. Expression is an important part of this time and something that Chinese medicine encourages us to do, especially when things are chaotic, is to stand still, to consolidate, and to not move into the flux all around us, but to find our internal compass, our internal way of orienting, even if that's different than the greater whole that's moving around us. That authenticity is valued above everything else.
Wow, I'm not sure if I understand all of that. So let's break it down. I mean, let's be very practical so that people can take away from this interview, you know, very practical goals or very practical ways in which they can face anxiety or stress. Obviously, first is recognizing that you're going through it, right?
Right. Recognizing is part of it.
Yes. So first is recognizing it. What if you didn't mention, for example, meditation? Mm-hmm. What do you think about? And when you talk about becoming still, for example, mm-hmm. are you saying, is that meditation? How does that look like?
So if anxiety scatters the energy. The opposite of scattering is collecting it back, is consolidating. And in our bodies, the place we consolidate our energies back into is our lower half. We consolidate it back to what the Chinese would describe as our kidneys, which is the seat of our power. These are different vectors of movement with emotions. Mm-hmm. And anxiety scatters that energy in our chest, in our heart, mm-hmm. which is our other way of knowing. Okay. And fear suspends that qi. It also can freeze emotion, okay, keep us from moving. So the first thing to do is to gather your feelings back to you, consolidate them, and then unfreeze it. So then when it's proper to make motion, to move into action, one, you feel your potency, and secondarily, you have it available to you because it's always scattered on the exterior. You turn on the television, I mean, which way are you even going? There's so many things coming at you, but to know where you are, what you believe, and to be able to orient. Mm-hmm. So the orientation is the most important thing in a season like winter, where we are in a time of unknowing, and then being able to orient, to know and wait for the time that's right, and then have a strategic planning mm-hmm. of how to make those changes, whether it's your individual health or greater goals mm-hmm. That are larger and societally of those incremental movements.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a caller online. Good mm-hmm. morning. You're on What's at Stake.
Good morning, caller. Ladies.
You're on What's at Stake.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Well,
mm-hmm. all right. My question is for the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I understand you're an herbalist also in Chinese medicine.
Yes, I am.
Is it possible that you would be familiar with the green nature products, the pills? There's a American name, mild form, and the Chinese name, Bao He Wan. If you're familiar with this product, I want to know, is it possible to overdose on this product? I have been taking the product for about 10 years.
So the question is about a traditional formula, and it's called Bohawan. And that formula is traditionally given to people with digestive disorders, people who have issues with being able to break down their food and to be able to extract nutrition from it. So it's essentially Chinese herbal products that help break down that food. And so I don't know, you should probably be working with an experienced practitioner or an herbalist to ask if you're having any side effects from it. But generally your side effects are gonna be that you have improved digestion. And if you've stayed with it for 10 years, then most likely you're seeing benefit from it. And it's helping you particularly in that digestive place.
Thank
you. You know, one of the things you can do also is in terms of Chinese medicine has a lot of modalities within it. One is herbalism, the other is acupuncture. We have meditation practices, we have Qigong, but we also have dietary therapy. And one of the recommendations I can say, if you're taking that formula, is to cook your food a long time. Help it break down before you consume it. So especially in this time, making soups, making stews, making kanjis, things that are long cooked. So that's easier for you to receive the nutrition from your food because you have done the processing before it even reaches your mouth.
Mm, interesting. Thank you so much. Let me ask you, can Chinese medicine be helpful with such diseases as hypertension, the common cold? Or diabetes, because obviously when you're stressed out and you're anxious, then obviously you're much more susceptible to these kinds of problems. So how can Chinese medicine help us with just very common problems sure. people have?
Sure. And Chinese medicine is all about practicality. And so I'm going to give you some ideas of foods that have those same Chinese medical principles as you would be receiving from an herbalist, as the acupuncturist be choosing in terms of their points, in order to resolve those conditions and help them. So the first thing to have on hand in a seasons of colds are going to be things that are slightly spicy and things that make you sweat, because the Chinese talk about a cold as a pathogen. And so it's something that gets past our defenses. It sneaks in, maybe because we're weakened, maybe because it's actually quite powerful. And so being able to push it out again, we open the pores. And we do that with foods like scallions, foods like ginger, mint, suishou. And we allow ourselves to diaphrease, to open our pores, to push that out to the surface again. So you want to make yourself sweat a little bit. You want to give yourself the opportunity to push it back out where it belongs, not inside of you in those first stages of a cold. And then as things progress, then I would probably turn to an herbalist or other remedies that are stronger. I like to say that foods are the herbs we don't eat, and herbs are the foods we don't enjoy eating, because they can be better and stronger in taste for anyone who's taken herbs. You're asking also about some of those more chronic diseases, and one of them, high blood pressure. We have to sort of step back and ask, you know, in a way, like what's causing that differential? Because when we have the pressure that's too high in relationship to the other side, there's something we want to be different. There's too much of a difference. So first, just step back and understand that differential could cause friction inside of us. It can cause heat as a result. And we also have oftentimes the people with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and that's often a kind of phlegm in our blood, a kind of burden, a kind of guilt, a kind of heaviness. So those two factors come together often to create high blood pressure. And I encourage people to go through their own angiogram, sort of look through the heart, look through all your vessels and see what might be causing that heaviness, what might be causing that stagnation, and what might be causing that heat. And every day we go into a new anatomical second, which is called a heartbeat. Think about, do you want to move that forward into the next minute? And so there are foods that can help. Foods that have long stems can help with the vessels themselves to relax, like celery, like Swiss chard. And things that are bitter help our heart. Our heart always, we even talk about it in English, our heart can be bitter. So things that are bitter help us to resolve that heat, resolve those desires of things being different in this moment, give us more patience, and they give us the ability to express. So radicchio, things like olives, foods that have a little bit of a bite to them and are more bitter, including bitter melon, which is another food we can use for when a person has diabetes to both lower blood sugar as well as lower the cholesterol. And then you can have some foods that calm the heart. And this helps with anxiety too. So calming our heart equals calming anxiety. And those foods would include lotus root, which you can find in Asian grocery stores or online in cans or fresh. Dates, things that are higher in magnesium. Pomegranates, in order to nourish the heart so that that blood pressure can come down.
Good. Thank you. That's incredible. So we have another caller. Good morning. You're on What's at Stake?
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have...
we can hear you.
We have a concern about the comparison between Chinese people and African people have, which would be the concern about how they compare in terms of the population as a whole.
The Chinese would look at a universality in terms of everything that a human experiences. And so the application of the medicine, I like to say, if we landed on Mars tomorrow, which we may in the next couple of years, who knows, that there would still be Chinese medicine because it's a medicine that applies principles. It applies traditional wisdom. You may be surprised that actually acupuncture was outlawed in 1929 in China because of that Westernized viewpoint, that scientized viewpoint, was rejecting all things traditional, even within that society. And it was revived by Mao, knowing that he had a public health problem on his hands, and it was effective. So despite a colonialist mentality that had been adopted in the modernization of China, they revived this medicine as a traditional means in order to apply it to the health of people. And then they have used it and proliferated it through the world in places such as Cuba. Cuba, during the embargoes, it really saved people's lives when there's no medicine coming through. And the average Cuban actually using natural herbs and acupuncture, because China was still helping them in terms of their medical system, that was part of the means which they helped. They lost 12 pounds and their health remained on parity with the U.S. during those times. And in the United States, acupuncture and Chinese medicine's always been there. It's always been there, especially for marginalized communities. So with HIV, before the antivirals were working, acupuncture is on the front lines. There's a tradition that was actually created in New York dealing with addictions medicine. And so that was happening at the Lincoln Detox Program, and that was by the stepfather of Tupac Shakur, actually created that community in response to heroin addiction in order to uplift that community when the eyes of the greater medical system was turning away. So it's always been there, it's always from the people, and it's always there to respond to new conditions.
Right. Thank you. Great question. So where does exercise play into all of this? I mean, we've talked about herbs. We've talked about, meditation. But where does exercise play a role in this kind of medicine?
Well, the concept of cardiovascular exercise is a little bit different in Chinese medicine. For the average person, rather than the athlete in training, the idea is to invigorate, not to exhaust. So we enliven ourselves through exercise. And I like to think about the idea of exercise is you have to love it. It has to be towards something. If you hate jogging, it makes you feel miserable and you're just doing it to avoid, let's say, a heart attack because you've been told that's what's going to happen to you if you don't exercise. That's a lot of negativity, even though it feels like a positive activity. You have to find things that make you feel alive and reasons to be alive with the exercise, with the movement, because movement is chi. And what are you moving towards is the way I would approach all kind of movement. And then within Chinese medicine, we have a lot of specific kind of movement meditations called Qigong. Maybe the most famous is Tai Chi. You've seen people do that. And they help to strengthen the body in various ways. And there's different organized movements that help immune system, help with different diseases, and help with general health.
Mm-hmm. So you know, you spoke of, when we spoke yesterday, you talked about preventive, you talked about the difference between preventive medicine and there was an alternative. Could you talk about that? When people are trying to prevent something, that's a negative move towards, did I get that right? Or?
Well, I think it's one of those words, preventing, and then you have to say preventing what? Something you're dreading versus an affirmation of life. And the Chinese have a concept of what's called yang shen, and it's translated as longevity, but it's really living every single moment to the fullest. Mm. Now, that could be a life that's as short as a fly. It could be a life of 99 years. But really, it's about affirming a love or value makes you feel healthier. And so all those practices you're doing, you may be taking 100 supplements, cooking your herbs, eating perfect food prepared by angels. But if it's not giving you a sense of health and vibrancy, then in a sense, you're not really creating health with it. And so that's one provocative idea I want to put out there is think about it as affirming medicine, not just preventive medicine. When you receive whatever modality it's from, Western, Eastern, Indian medicine, whatever you're receiving.
So how can people reach you? Because obviously our audience is very interested in what you're talking about. So how can people reach you?
Sure. My office is located at Yaoshan Center. We have another practitioner here, my partner, Evan Rabinowitz. And we're located on Farragut Square. So we're just north of the White House, south of DuPont Circle. I like to say we're doing missionary work down here, helping people change their mindset too. And you can reach us by phone, 202-822-4664. 202-822,
okay.
202-822-4664. Our website is Yaoshan Center, YaoShanCenter.com.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, thank you. This is an amazing conversation. And I'm looking forward to having you on so many more times because I think this is, you know, there has to be an alternative to Western medicine. I mean, particularly as it becomes out of reach for so many people. You know, getting back to basics and understanding how we can improve our health and be happier and look forward to life as opposed to, you know, preventing some horrible disease down the road has to be a way that we begin to look at these things. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I have a lot of optimism for everyone in the world, like Chairman O'Malley. I think it's hard times, but we have so much to look forward to individually and together.
Thank you so much. Okay, so I'd like to thank all of our guests today, Chairman O'Malley, Asatala, Diane, Giasu. Thanks for executive producer, Ms. Verna Avery Brown. This program is engineered by Mr. Michael Nasella. I'm Marcia Coleman Adebayo. We are celebrating the 22nd anniversary of the passage of the No Fear Act, the first civil rights and whistleblower law of the 21st century. WPFW salutes whistleblowers.
Code Pink, Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash, Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
We're back! WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or a daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
Peace. I'm DJ Underdog, inviting you to join me on Black Star Radio Mondays, 10 p.m. to midnight, beginning April 19th. We share the hottest sounds out of Africa from all corners of the motherland and bring you the sound of the African American Underground to DC and all points in between. Together, we'll explore African genres from Amapiano, Genge, Coupe de Calle, Zouk, Lingala, Ethiopian hits, Soukous, Nigerian hits, Egyptian hits, and Afro beats. The destination is Africa. And the mission is oneness. Journey with us Mondays at 10 p.m. right here on WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time. Peace.
Talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world.